Hi, I'm Andy Reid.
And I'm Mike Porter.
You're listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations, which is aired on the third Wednesday of each month from 2 until 3 p.m. on WGXC 90.7 FM.
On each show, invited guests will be asked to discuss a number of items that they intend taking with them on their Catskill Cabin getaway. As we discuss their chosen items, it is hoped that you, the listener, will enjoy getting to know that person a little bit better.
Today in the show, we have Patricia Charbonneau. Patricia was born in Long Island and was the youngest of 10 children. She attended Valley Stream Central High School with actors including Steve Buscemi and Steve Heitner, as well as writer Ed Renahan. She attended Boston University and the Lexington Conservatory Theatre Company in the Catskills. Patricia has acted in films including Desert Hearts and K2 and on TV in shows including One Special Night and Law & Order Criminal Intent. She's married and has two daughters. Patricia, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. It's so fun to be here.
So you're the baby child of 10 kids then?
Yes, I am. Five girls, five boys, and I am number 10.
So were you spoiled rotten?
I don't think so, no.
No, well, cause, no, the reason I'm asking is because when you get to that age, you know, your mum and dad have made all the mistakes, and then when they get to you at 10 years old, the 10th child, all the mistakes have been made.
Yeah, that's true. They were definitely much looser with the bottom. My father had us in two platoons, the first platoon and the second platoon. So the second platoon definitely got away with a lot more than the first platoon.
Now, your father's French. Is he actually bona fide French?
My dad was born in New York. Both my parents are from immigrant parents.
Yeah.
My dad's father was from Montreal area, Mont-Tremblant, actually, North Saint-Juvit. And his mother was from Ireland. So all of my actual relatives that I still know that are living are actually in Ireland.
And do you know whereabouts in Ireland your mom's from?
I'm supposed to and I shouldn't, but I can't think of it right now.
Yeah.
I know.
I'm actually just back from Ireland. I was in Cork, County Cork, Ballinspittle is a small town just outside of Kinsale, which is not far from Cork. I was visiting my brother and his fiancée and their daughter, Winnie. It was such a beautiful picturesque landscape.
So you're
looking out to sea and the next stop is France, you know. Just wonderful country. Miss it dearly.
Patricia,
I do
know from history that Sacagawea, who helped Lewis and Clark on their journey, Sacagawea was married to a Charbonneau. And is there any connection there? Or?
Yes, she is, I think, my fourth aunt removed, you know, fourth generation back aunt. Yes.
Oh, sure.
Yes, we are related.
Cool.
Also pronounced as Sacagawea.
Sacagawea, sorry about that.
Yeah, I was going to, that was the next question. How do you pronounce it? Because I was teaching in Wyndham last year for an extended period of time, and I was doing the Lewis and Clark thing, and I was pronouncing it Sacagawea, and then we played a DVD, and it was pronounced the way you pronounced it. So I was like, right, so what is it here? So
I got to get on that. 25 years of old school elementary and secondary education. Sacagawea's nailed into my head.
Yeah, it's indoctrinated.
Yep, clean it out. That's okay. You know, it'll take me a few tries, but I'll remember.
Now, I was looking through some of your information, Patricia, and on our last show, last month, the interviewee was myself. And one of the songs I played was Del Shannon, Runaway. And I mentioned to Mike when we were talking about it that it was a theme tune to a show. And I couldn't remember the name of the show. And lo and behold, when I was looking up your information, you'd been on said show.
Yes.
What show is that?
Crime Story.
Crime Story, yeah.
Michael Mann in Chicago.
What a coincidence that is, Mike. Yeah?
No kidding,
yeah. So there you go.
Michael had that redone for his show. He did have a new version of that done.
Right, and is this the actor who passed away recently?
Dennis Farina was my love interest in it.
Yeah.
And one of the most gentle and sincere and compassionate people I had the absolute pleasure of working with in this business. Yes, he totally looked after me.
Is that the guy with the mustache?
Yeah. He was a Chicago cop originally.
Yeah?
He had like 25 years on the force.
Wow, didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's interesting. And another program I mentioned on my show was The Rockford Files. And I know you've worked with James Garner. And I know he died not that long ago as well. Talking about cop shows, is a cop car going by right now?
No, we added that in for sound effect. We
Well, I got to play James Garner's daughter, so I don't think one could ask for more than that in life. And to be sitting in the back seat with James Garner and Julie Andrews in the front seat of a car and having them go at it with their history going back to when they did, what I think it was 1961, the Americanization of Emily, where they first met. Right. And having all known parents and kids and husbands and wives and listening to them go at it in the front, her with her little English accent, oh, James, James, don't say that with the children in the back. And him just being the American.
Excellent, excellent. So Steve Buscemi, is he a buddy of yours or is he?
Well, we grew up together on Long Island. He was two or three grades ahead of me in school. When I was in 10th grade, I think I was in 10th grade, yes, and when we were in and he was in 12th, we did Fiddler on the Roof together with Lynn Lappin. Central had this, Valley Stream Central had the most amazing, beautiful proscenium arch theater that was probably built during the WPA days. Stunning, beautiful theater. And Lynn Lappin, who was our acting coach and teacher there, God rest his soul, did some of the most amazing productions for school that I was so lucky to be a part of, and what really did help me try and make me decide to want to go into acting actually there. So yeah, so Steve and I worked together on that, and then actually when I moved, I did a film called Desert Hearts, and when that was coming out, Steve was coming out with a film called Parting Glances. So interestingly enough, I was playing a gay woman and he was playing a gay man in his first film. And then we've met up from time to time since.
Now, is acting your first love, or?
Yes. Yes, I really have been very fortunate to have always wanted to do it since I was since I can remember, and then having sort of happenstance and things happen in my life that have been so wonderful to be able to create that.
I've watched a number of your things on, since we're doing a bit of research on what you do, and I've been looking at some of it, and I'm very impressed by your acting ability. So,
Thank you. It's
a pleasure to have you on the show. Mike, shall we?
Yeah, why don't we move on to our first song? This is When I Woke, the album Send Me on My Way by Rusted Root. And this group is out of Pittsburgh, actually, and they have kind of African, Latin American, Native American influences in their music. And it's a lot of joy. And some of their music has been featured in films, including Ice Age and on TV.
Why this song?
Very much what Michael said about the joy. It makes me want to dance like a whirling dervish, and it lifts any troubles I have, and I like to send them right into the universe.
What's a whirling dervish?
What's a whirling dervish? A whirling dervish is... I tend to, when I dance, like to put my arms up and circle a lot.
Right.
Well, whirling dervishes, it's a branch of Islam or Hinduism, but it's people that they spin, and it's like a spiritual.
They spin, it's like a spiritual.
Right. See. So you're an animated dancer?
Yes.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. So is this a band that you, because when I looked at this band, they seemed quite a youthful band, and, a lot of people... of our age don't usually get into younger bands. I was just wondering, is this something that you really picked? Where did you find out about them?
I found out about them right on their first album, actually.
Yeah.
So I'm not even sure how I remember.
I'll be honest, I've never heard of them.
Yeah. A few years back, they were at Woodstock again, and they really just performed right at the Village Green, and I had to jam down
sort of the part where they play the drumming in a Sunday.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And did you just happen to stand and watch them for nothing?
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah. Excellent.
No kidding.
Oh, yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Well, they're from, was it Pittsburgh, you say?
Yeah.
Right. That's interesting. Shall we play the song? Well, pick me up with golden hand, Ombetseo, Ombetseo.
to see everybody on. Well, I would like to hold my little hand. Have you been crying? Have you been crying? I would like to hold my little hand. Have you been crying? Have you been crying?
You're listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations on WGXC 90.7 FM. That was When I Woke by Rusted Brute. Today we have Patricia Charbonneau. Again, Patricia, welcome.
Thank you.
Now, Patricia, your second item that you would like to take with you is a hammered dulcimer. Have I pronounced that properly?
Yes, you have.
I'll be honest again, I had never heard of one of these items. I knew it was an instrument of some sort, but I didn't really know what it was.
Well,
could you explain what it is and why you want to take it?
This is a traveling one. It's called a traveling one, so it's a 12 and 14 string on it.
Right.
And to be totally honest, it's just something I've always wanted to learn how to play. And this time last year, my husband surprised me, and one very beautiful hammered dulcimer arrived at my door.
Wow.
So I'm not very good at it, but I really, really enjoy just kind of plucking away on it when the sun's going down or in the summertime down by the creek, and the way it resonates in just in the mountains. And it just makes me feel wonderful and kind of getting back in touch with people from the past that may no longer be here with me right now, but whose presence I feel very strongly.
So you feel that as a spiritual resonance with it?
Right.
And have you learned any songs on it? Have you fabricated any tunes? Or?
Let's say I have fabricated many tunes, none of which I think have ever been written.
I was looking at it and I was actually wanted to listen to it before we came on the show, and for some reason I get distracted and I forgot, and I'm a wee bit annoyed myself because of that happened. But I'd love to. When I go home tonight, I'm going to listen to hammered dulcimer because you know it sounds interesting. What I did look at was where because I'd never heard of it, I thought myself, well, who actually plays these things? And one of the things that I realised was that it's very much played in the eastern part of the world. Iraq, Iran, Eastern Asia.
See, that's interesting. I think of it much more as actually like an American roots and also Irish, Celtic. Uh-huh.
Well, it was actually people play it in Wales as well. Mm-hmm. But one of the most frequent countries that it's played in, according to the information I'm reading, is the eastern part of the world, the Middle East and further south and west. Well, east rather, and I found that quite surprising. It's kind of like to me a flat harp, you know?
Yes, very much like that. Because at one time I was thinking I'd like to learn how to play the harp, and then I thought, who am I kidding at my age trying to figure out that instrument? At least with the hammered dulcimer, I could kind of pluck out some sounds and maybe not irritate my dog too much.
And it has kind of like a bell quality to it, maybe like a resonant.
Yeah.
But it is a stringed instrument. Initially, I had like steel drums in my head. I was like, hammered dulcimer. Yeah, I can kind of picture that. And then I saw it and I was like, oh, that is not it. That's not what I thought. But
no,
beautiful.
It's definitely not a steel drum.
Yeah, it absolutely sounds beautiful.
I hear it a lot when, you know, if you go to like a country fair and you see some real bluegrass music also has a lot of it. Mm-hmm. Traditional.
Yeah. Do you know who Paul Van Arsdale is?
No, I don't. Should I?
I don't know. But Paul Van Arsdale is one of the most famous players of one of these instruments in New York State. And he hails from an area quite close to Mike. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
He's from North, now I'm going to pronounce this really badly, Tonawanda, Niagara County.
Yeah.
Is that far from
North Tonawanda? Yeah, I'm from maybe an hour east of there.
Right. And this guy, he manufactured two beating drumstick things made out of hacksaw blades and pieces of wood with some thin layered leather over it, and he was very, very famous.
Oh, how beautiful.
In his field of
hammered dulcimer playing.
Yes. So
I will have to look him up now.
And he does have in 1987 he did produce a book of tunes, so you can find his stuff.
I will look
in
for
a book, and that may help you and inspire you to become the second person in New York State to be known for that instrument.
Well, some of these video game systems now, they've gone past Guitar Hero, and they have an actual like guitar game where you can learn to play the guitar. Imagine that for the hammered dulcimer.
There you go.
You know, you just plug it into your Xbox, and wham, 2 weeks of video games, you got this thing.
Brilliant.
Now, the next song we're going to talk about is... we're going to listen to is The Marriage of Figaro by Mozart, but what we're really interested in is who it's sung by, and it's sung by Kiri Takenawa. It's The Marriage of Figaro, beautiful voice. When did you first hear her music? When did you get turned on to her?
I think I was probably quite young when I first moved to New York, so that's going back to about 1979, and there was a great classical music station on, and I had just come from spending a summer with this incredible rogue group of actors up here in the Northern Catskills at Lexington. And so it was my introduction to New York. And actually, one of the first jobs I got 2 weeks after being in New York was with the New York City Opera. They hired me as a young actress for a scene in the opera street scene. So I would hear opera singers rehearsing and singing, and I thought, wow, this is something. And then someone told me about her, and ever since, I just have thought she has the voice of the angels.
And that she does. There's some opera singers that you can listen to and you can say, yeah, that's really good. And then some you listen to and go, wow.
Yeah.
And she's one of them.
Yeah, she moves me for sure.
Yeah, very powerful.
And the Met is trying to bring a lot of this back. They're having trouble financially, but they're broadcasting through IMAX their Productions.
Yeah, I've been to one.
Right.
Oh, how was it?
Yeah, I went to the Bardavon Theatre a couple of years ago, watched La Traviata.
How was that?
It was excellent, yeah. There was an unfortunate incident that caused me to have an uncomfortable experience.
Did somebody take your seat?
There was two really, really obese women sitting next to me who smelled rancid.
Oh, heavens. Gosh.
And that was my first experience of opera.
Oh,
And people were apologising to me for the experience I had to go through sitting next. And every time they clapped, they were wafting this.
Oh, heavens.
And I was like...
Oh, my gosh.
And then we went to see Ken Burns. People took our seats from the school.
So I'm a jinx. Don't go to the theater with me.
If it's a performance of any kind.
Don't go with me.
Yeah. Kiri Takenawa, The Marriage of Figaro.
That was Kiri Takenawa singing The Marriage of Figaro by Mozart. Now, Patricia, the next item you'd like to take with you is a picture.
Ah.
Would you like to talk about said picture?
Sure. Well, it's a picture of me and my four other sisters. There are five girls, as I mentioned earlier. And we are all standing under the sort of sacred apple tree, which is in bloom. So I would imagine it was probably Memorial Day weekend, because that seemed to be when that always was in bloom.
Mm-hmm.
We're laughing, and we're caught so off guard and so joyous and so full of life, and just, I think it's an amazing picture. I actually did show it to the two of you, because I do have it here with me.
Yeah, as a fantastic picture.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's just so capturing a moment that I have lost two of the sisters that are in that photo. I've had one sister die of cancer and the other die very, very suddenly. Just one Friday morning having a headache, and then we were taking her off life support by the end of the day, which was a very, very grueling experience. And that would be my sister Kate, who actually lived in this area and worked here in Hudson. So this picture captures a moment that can never be again, and right. yet is such a moment of innocence and beauty, and whatever the future holds is sort of in that picture, not knowing what.
Right. And is the tree still alive, and do you know, can you go back to that tree again?
I can go back to that tree. The property has been passed on. It used to be the sort of the family compound, and after my dad died, through certain different things with the family. It has moved on to other people. It is close by where I live. And the kind of the most astonishing thing about this tree is that it has been broken in half. It has been run over. It has been everything that could possibly have ever happened to this tree has happened to it. And yet there's always this one branch that blooms.
And that's the amazing thing, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Excellent.
Yeah.
And you've not aged a bit in the photograph until now.
Oh, you're sweet. It's been a long time.
No, but you're right. You know, see when people do get caught unawares, I think that's when you capture their beauty.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's when people actually stop, prepare and pose for a photograph that you actually lose that natural element.
Right.
And that photograph that you did show myself and Mike, does illustrate very clearly the natural, how natural the picture was.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I think I love about it the most. It's just so natural and just so capturing a moment in life. And, you know, we try to do that with music, you know. Sometimes, when you hear a song, you know, when you ask me about music, I thought of things like that. And film does that and books can do that. And the arts. I mean, the arts, that's, I think, what the big thing is about the arts. You can capture moments and just little snippets of life that you're not even aware of how important they are at the moment. And then you can get to look back on it. It has a whole new meaning.
It seems fairly obvious now why you would take the picture with you on your getaway, but why would you take the picture?
I would assume, asking about a getaway in the Catskills is sort of a funny thing since I already live in the Catskills and I live in Maplecrest and it's a beautiful valley and it's very secluded and all that. So I'm sort of living that anyway. But
not in this cabin. This cabin is in a small place that you don't know of.
Then I definitely need the picture.
It's in Hudsonville.
So you're taking it why?
I would assume that I would probably be writing while I was away on this, and I think that's a picture that I've always wanted to sit down and sort of write about, and I never have.
Right. Mm. Interesting.
And talking about the arts and your experience in film and movies, have you been on Broadway?
No. And, funny enough, that was the actual original dream of mine, to be on Broadway. So I have not had the opportunity to do that. I did a lot of off-Broadway, when I was young and starting out, certainly.
Yeah.
But I have never had the opportunity to be on Broadway.
Because I recall the story where you were, I think, in your teens, and you went to an audition, and the lights were bright. And
That was at the New York City Opera. That was a pretty funny. I was in New York for two weeks, and I was dancing in a show. I was brought down, the folks at Lexington, the theater company at Lexington Conservatory Theater, I ended up, I was 19, and I came down to New York and moved into Manhattan, and I was dancing in a show that they were bringing to Playwrights Horizons. It was actually a punk rock musical of a 1664 play around Shakespearean time kind of thing called Revenger's Tragedies, and I got picked out by the person who was running the spotlight in that and said, I have a friend that works at the New York City Opera, and they were looking for a young actress to play this small part in Street Scene. And I said, great, I'd love to go. So there I was on the stage of the New York City Opera, which is a huge, beautiful stage. And it is true. The lights came on. It was right out of, the movies of, putting your hands over your eyes and looking out. Who's out there? Who's out there?
Kind of Barbara Streisand-esque.
Very much, very much that. And I read the little scene. And the director, who I couldn't see, was just a voice in the seat, saying, "That was very good. You kind of remind me of a young Carol Kane." And I went, "Oh, no, I'm not a young Carol Kane. I'm Patricia Charbonneau." And I started to walk off the stage. And I really didn't mean it in any other way except that I was 19. I had braces on my teeth, for Pete's sakes. My hair was all frizzed out because I'd had a perm for this part. I still had braces on my mouth. And he starts laughing. He goes, wait a minute. How long have you been here? And I said, about 2 weeks. And he said, "You want to do this part?" I said, "I would love to do this part." He said, "Okay."
Brilliant. That's the way to do it.
Never was quite that simple after, but that was...
Naively brazen.
Exactly. And I certainly didn't mean it in any disrespect. It was just sort of like, Carol Kane. No, I'm not a Carol Kane type, you know.
Brilliant. That's the way to do it. I was going to say before you started your story there, you know, Mike said, have you been in Broadway? And I was going to say, you know, I've been in Broadway. But from there, I got a taxi to JFK.
It was lovely. The tickets booth is very helpful.
Oh, brilliant. Now, one item you would like to take with you is your favorite shawl.
Actually, I have two favorite shawls, so I was really trying to figure out which one.
All right, we'll let you take two.
Well, one was actually from, I had the great opportunity, again, to do a film called K2, and we did shoot quite a few weeks in Pakistan, in Skardu, and some of the other part of it was shot up in the Canadian Yukon, and to double for that, but we did also go to Skardu. The man who taught me how to climb, because I did do all my own climbing in the film, the rock climbing as well as the snow and ice, was a Pakistani man named Nazir Sabir, who was the first Pakistani to climb K2. And he was my coach and climbing instructor. And we lived in tents. There were about 75 of us up on the Waddington Glacier. And then when we went to Skardu, he introduced me to his family. He married a beautiful Japanese woman because he was also part of the first expedition. He was part of the expedition with the first Japanese team that made it to the top of K2 as well. And on that expedition, Nazir lost his brother on the way down. So K2 is a very potent and powerful place. And
is K2 the second highest mountain in the world? Yeah,
it is, yes. Yeah. It's considered by many climbers to be tougher than Everest because of its the weather patterns that it creates to itself there.
Right.
And when you go there, it is amazing. I mean, to be in the Karakoram and to be on the Indus River, it's a funny story. It's going off a little bit, but it does have to do with the shawl eventually. I promise I'll get back to it. I lived with 75 Shiite men. Yes, men who were climbers. And when we were in Canada, it was Canadian Thanksgiving, and they had never been outside of, you know, their little town there, Skardu. So we were up on the Waddington Glacier, and I brought music with me, and I bought Aretha Franklin, and I bought Bonnie Raitt. So that was the only night that we had alcohol up there, and we put music on, and I proceeded to dance and introduce them to Bonnie Raitt. And,
and did you do your spinning dancing?
Well, they do spinning, too.
Ah,
so we were doing a bit of a spinning thing together.
Right.
So then when I was in Pakistan and we were in Skardu, we went off into the Indus Valley, and it was the most amazing experience because here you are in the Himalaya and there is no light. You don't see lights from cities, obviously, or anything. And the full moon was rising up over the mountains. And I didn't even know what it was when it was started to come up because it was such a unique experience to see in such a place when you're already at 14,000 feet. And I didn't really know what it was. And we were all sitting around a campfire and they were playing their indigenous instruments. So they got up and danced with me and taught me all of theirs.
Fantastic.
Which was sort of a very interesting thing to do because when I did go back to Pakistan, I did realize that women were very much treated differently, obviously, than here. And I thought it was very gracious of them, and I think they were very comfortable with me. And we danced.
It must have been a magical experience.
I have a feeling it'll be one of those things that will flash through my mind before I die.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So it was a magical experience.
It was so intense and magical.
Please don't tell me that at the end of the story you found a Walmart and you bought a shawl.
I was given a shawl. I was given some textiles before I left by some of, by Nazir and some of the people
so
that I met.
So they
there.
Obviously mean a lot to you then.
Yeah.
And when you're dancing in the Catskills, you can wear the shawl.
Oh, I have.
That's fantastic. Yeah. Now, talking of fantastic music, the next bit, I'll start that again. It's not the next piece of music. I was going to go on to Joni Mitchell there, and it wasn't Joni Mitchell. Actually, it was. Speaking of great music, your next song that you would like to take is Joni Mitchell, Court and Spark. Both the name of the album and the name of one of the songs on the album. Why Joni Mitchell? Daft question, but why Joni Mitchell?
Always Joni Mitchell. That's the answer to it. At all times, Joni Mitchell. From her first album to present day. I guess there are soundtracks in your life, and Joni Mitchell is definitely one of the ones in mine.
Joni Mitchell's mother was Scottish. Irish. Did you know that?
I didn't, but there I'm glad.
Yeah, so I mean that's kind of where her, I'm sure the Irish and Scottish Gaelic influence comes into the her music, her influences, her writing, her the way she presents her music, you know, the kind of Gaelic folk influence on that. So yeah. A fantastic singer. Why this? What particular about this album?
I think this album, maybe because I don't know. I go back to it a lot. You know, I mean, every once in a while I go back. I mean, when I was young and a teenager and first falling in love, of course it was Ladies of the Canyon. And even though it was already out for years and years and years, but you know, when I was a teenager, it just resonates with me. And for some reason, Court and Spark. It's just really fun to go back to that. Well, a funny story is the last song on it has got Cheech and Chong on it. And when I lived in California, I had a little theater company there, and one of my dearest friends in California is Precious Chong, is Tommy's daughter. And it was so cool to meet her, and then, you know, we've been friends for, oh boy, a long time now. I guess Hannah was 5 when we met, and now she's 29, but... upon meeting her, it was almost as if, you know, making some sort of full circle of how things like that happen in life, how paths cross that you don't expect. And
interesting.
Yeah.
Most people recognize, you know, if they think of a Joni Mitchell song, they think of, you know, Big Yellow Taxi.
Right.
Or Woodstock.
Right.
But this song... you know, Court and Spark, such a really, really beautiful song.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for me, when I listen to it, it kind of illustrates what Joni Mitchell's all about.
Yeah.
Shall we listen to it?
I would love to.
Okay.
Came to my door with a sleeping roll and a madman's soul. He thought for sure I'd seen him dancing up a river in the dark, looking for a woman to court and spark. He was playing on sidewalk for passing change when something strange happened. Glory train passed through him, so he buried the coins he made in People's Park and went looking for a woman to court and spark. It seemed like he read my mind. He saw me trusting him and still acting kind. He saw how I worried. Sometimes I worry sometimes. All the guilty people, they said they've all seen the stain on their daily bread, on their Christian names. I cleared myself, I sacrificed my blues, and you could complete me.
his eyes were the color of the sand in the sea. And the more he talked to me, you know, the more he reached me. But I couldn't let go of L.A., city of the fallen angels.
That was the unmistakable Joni Mitchell, described by the Rolling Stone magazine as one of the greatest songwriters ever, and by AllMusic as, when the dust settles, Joni Mitchell may stand as the most important and influential female artists of the late 20th century. And she describes herself as a painter derailed by circumstance. So
that's fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, I think she's one of those people who people of a certain age will never forget and will always marvel at. And yeah, she's fantastic, Joni Mitchell. Now, one of the things you want to take with you is, I think that a lot of people like to take with them is a journal.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you? Well, it's a daft question.
Yeah, well, you know, I've been writing in journals for probably since I was, I would say probably when I first moved to New York, so 19, and I'm in my early 50s now. But the journal writing to me has been, sometimes I will do it religiously, and then I will literally not do it for years and then go back to it, and
right.
always do find that I do like to go back to it. I had some circumstances happen, the death of that particular sister I was mentioning earlier, that brought me back to it after not having written for a long time. But it was such a powerful experience that I really needed to, I needed to write it out to be able to understand it a little better, to look for forgiveness, and to be able to kind of move on from it.
Right.
So it's kind of become really important again.
So would you say it's more like a coping mechanism or an avenue to an outlet for your feelings?
I would definitely say more than even a coping mechanism, when maybe that is what it is, but it's an outlet.
Right.
It's an outlet, as is the outlet of walking my dog for about a couple of miles every morning.
Right.
The conversations I have with Chester. I think that should be the name of my autobiography, Conversations with Chester, because I do tell Chester everything.
Cute.
So Chester's firmly in the know then.
Oh, he knows things. That has to go to the grave with him.
Tell us about Chester. What kind of dog is he?
He is a very wrong Brittany Spaniel. No one would want him. He's about 22 inches tall instead of being the usual 19. He is the dark brown and not the orange thing. He's got the apple nose. He has every single thing wrong with him that a Brittany could have, and he's perfect.
And that's the unique thing about your dog.
Yeah.
Is that he's not the convention.
No, so far from it. He's
Brilliant.
A shaggy, crazy, wild thing.
And who wants the norm?
Apparently not me.
And he's living in heaven there in the Catskills. No better place for a dog, I'm sure. Does he get to run it all and chase animals? And
yes, he actually, I got a major coyote problem going on right now, though. To tell you the truth, I have to be really careful because I send him out in the back, and this last full moon, which was that amazing Jigunda moon we had, there we've been going crazy, like surround sound around my house, like three different groups of coyotes. My neighbor and I were out there clanging pots and with the flashlights on their beady little eyes and trying to get my dog in. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah. My cat, Ruby, I worry about her a lot, when she's out and stuff. And every time Mike's up, he reminds me that she's living in Nirvana, and she's having a great time. And she's probably one of the luckiest cats because she's got such a playground.
Oh, yeah. She's got a love life like crazy. Oh yeah,
and she's always bringing in, chipmunks,
bringing little presents for you. Nice.
Yeah.
Andy was in London for a couple of weeks, so I went over to check on Ruby, and I'm sitting on the couch, you know, on my phone texting or, you know, just sitting with her. And she jumps behind the couch in the corner and she's doing something. And suddenly this chipmunk came bounding out from under the couch by my legs, and she jumped over and chased it. And so even while indoors, she had this reserve of animals.
To keep her busy while Andy was away. You know, that's fantastic.
Yeah, a true story. The morning I was leaving, I was, you know, I was overcome by guilt, the fact that I was leaving her, and I was worried about her. And so I said, I'll let her out in the morning, and then I'll bring her in the afternoon when I leave. I kid you not, and half an hour before I left, she brought a snake in.
Jeez.
And she put the snake in the bathroom. She ran out again. 15 minutes later, she brought in a chipmunk.
Oh, no.
It was almost as if she knew I was leaving and she was stockpiling.
That's so funny.
We were joking.
What a clever cat.
I was half expecting to go over one day and see her like presiding over some sort of gladiator ring in the bathtub. She's got a snake pitted against a chipmunk and this little chorus of mice giving the thumbs up or thumbs down.
Animal Farm.
Yeah.
She's standing parading on the perimeter of the bath with the suit on and the cap.
Jeez. It's a good thing she's so adorable.
Oh my gosh, they are amazing. Our pets are amazing. They teach us so much.
Brilliant.
Now, another item you'd like to take, Patricia, is John Waters' new book, Carsick. for those listening, is about John Waters hitchhiking across America from Baltimore to San Francisco. The picture on the book is him with a cardboard sign reading, "I'm not psycho." And that does sound like an interesting read, and it reminded me there's a film out called Craigslist Joe, and it's a documentary film about a kid that hitchhikes around the United States just using Craigslist.
Oh, how great! I didn't know about that. Uh-huh.
Ads, and it's pretty good. But so why John Waters? Why this book? How did you hear about it?
Well, you know, I thought I would bring something a little light, as opposed to thinking, you know, I needed to read something a bit too heavy. Enough heaviness in the world right now. So if I'm going to escape for a few days, why not take John Waters? I heard his interview with Terry Gross, and I just couldn't stop laughing. I mean, he is so unique, and he is so true to who he is. And the stories he had to tell were simply amazing, And I thought, oh, I've got to read this.
And, you know, I think what Craigslist Joe was surprising, he was able to get around the entire country without, I think he spent one night in a fast food restaurant. Other than that, he always had a place to stay in like the weeks and weeks that he did this. You know, people are by and large good and generous, and met really fascinating people. And, you know,
he definitely met fascinating people. Some some actually recognized him or said things like, "Oh my gosh, you look so much like that director," you know, kind of a thing. And I don't want to retell any of the stories he told because I might get them wrong because I just listened to the interview. But, you know, and then some people like came back and picked him up again and drove him a little further. And the conversations he was having, you know, his political ideas, ideology, and expressing that with some of the people that he was driving with. It just was pretty amazing.
Yeah. Well, as we know, we live in a pretty rural area.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever pick up any hitchhikers?
No, I wouldn't. I mean, once in a while, I pick up a guy that I know is a painter up there, but I don't think.
Yeah, I've picked up about three or four people. There are always people I pick up. I know that, you know, I size up within a fraction of a second. Say, if it came to it, I think I could beat him up. So I'll pick him up, you know. And I've picked up maybe a guy who's, it's usually someone who's got a DWI and can't drive and needs to go to their work or something.
Yeah.
And they're going to a restaurant to flip burgers or something.
Yeah, exactly,
and
I
drop them off. And there's always a little angle in it for me, and I'm saying to myself, if I ever go to that restaurant, I hope he sees me and spots me a burger or something, you know.
But it won't be a McDonald's, will it, Andy?
Absolutely not. No. So, but it sounds really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And have you read the book or?
No, that's why I said I haven't read it yet. But after, if I was thinking about, you know, doing this, going to a cabin, that's what I think I would like to bring along.
Right.
I will. I have it on order.
Right. I've got. It's funny you should mention this book. Something slightly similar. Someone returned a book to me yesterday, a book called Travels with Charlie by John Steinbeck.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've read that book.
You lent it to me. It was excellent.
Oh, I did. So this book's been passed around then. So I got it back again. So I'm going to reread that. I think it's such a great book about John Steinbeck and his dog. traveling across the country in a caravan.
Right, and so that was like what, in the 30s?
I can't remember.
It was the 50s.
Oh, the 50s. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It was during the Civil Rights Movement.
Oh, and, I haven't read that. See, I have to read that. I think it's
excellent.
Time to read about traveling again, traveling across America in different time periods.
I've got the book in the car. I'll give it to you.
Oh, great. Yeah. Okay.
So, yeah. Yes, I'll give you the book.
Okay.
I won't spoil it. I'm tempted.
And then I'll pass it back on to Michael. No.
Again, hooray.
Oh, see, as no one dies at the end. So there you go.
Yeah, that's good.
And really inspiring. I'd love to travel more. And John Steinbeck, you know, he fits himself out with like a primitive kind of camper in mm-hmm. his truck, this pickup truck. And really, really, I think that'd be fun to do maybe for a summer or, you know, for a short time. Just kind of drive out the West. And
yeah. Sure.
Have you traveled out West, Patricia?
Yeah, well, I used to live in Los Angeles, Santa Monica. We lived out there for 11 years, so I did some traveling along the coast there.
Sure.
And also, you know, shot in different states, so.
So, yeah, you've done tons of traveling.
Colorado, yeah, I have. Well, my husband is from Europe. He's from Budapest, Hungary.
Oh, he is, mm-hmm. Yeah.
We actually met on a film, Call Me in New York, which Steve Buscemi was in with me also. Ah. Isn't that terrible? I forgot about that.
See, the next time you speak to Steve Buscemi, tell him to get his teeth fixed.
I think that's part of the appeal, right?
So your husband's an actor?
No, my husband's a director of photography.
Director. Right.
Yeah,
right.
Not a director, cinematographer.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And does he still do that?
Yes, he does.
Yeah.
Yes,
excellent.
He does. Mm-hmm.
Excellent. And he's from Hungary.
Mm-hmm. Budapest.
Budapest. Actually, that's one of the countries where this hammer dulcimer is quite prevalent.
There you go. Maybe
so there
that's
you
it
are.
Too.
Yeah, it's on it's my list, home. On my book here. Yeah, interesting. The things that are coincidental.
Now, the last song that we're going to get to is Every Time We Say Goodbye, sung by Ella Fitzgerald from the Cole Porter Collection.
Mm-hmm.
And Ella Fitzgerald has a beautiful voice, mm-hmm. Soothing to listen to. And why that song, Patricia?
Well, believe it or not, when I met my husband, the wall was still up, and he was working here on an H-12 visa, so he had to leave after we finished shooting this film in New York, and I didn't know if I'd ever see him again, because it would be very difficult for me to get there and for him to get back. He could certainly not get back here, and I didn't know if I could get back there. And we, at the, one of the last songs that we danced to was this.
Mm.
Yeah.
Such a powerful song, isn't
yeah.
it? It's very emotive.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and then needless to say, the end of August, we just were married for 26 years. So.
Wow. So you came back then?
Well, that's a whole nother, that's another show.
Do we have time, mate?
There's time, I want to know.
Let's listen to the song and then we can marvel at that and then we can talk briefly about it when it finishes.
Goodbye. to minor every time we say goodbye.
You're listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations on WGXE 90.7 FM. That was Lady Ella, the Queen of Jazz, the First Lady of Song, Ella Fitzgerald. Superb choice, Patricia, I have to say.
Thank you. I don't think you can go wrong with anything by Ella.
Yeah, I mean, if there's two people that were having a contest, a singing contest, it would be her and Aretha Franklin.
Mm.
They would be the heavyweights in the boxing ring fighting out the right out to be named the Queen of Music or Soul Music.
Truly.
Voice, you know. Fantastic. You know, beautiful voice and a great song. Well, that kind of ties everything up very nicely. It's been a pleasure having you on Catskill Cabin Conversations. However, before you go, we do have one question we would like to ask you.
Okay.
How do you take your coffee?
Oh, I take my coffee first thing in the morning. Don't even talk to me until I have it with half and half, no sugar.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
And what type of coffee do you like?
Strong.
She's my type of gal, Mike. My girlfriend said to me, I've been waiting a lifetime to hear a man say those words to me. And I looked at her and said, what? She went, you make a fine cup of coffee.
Yeah.
I like mine strong, French roast, black.
Me too. Oh, you're black. I have to have the old half and half.
Yeah.
Definitely no
sugar. She's the same. She drinks exactly the same as you do. Strong, black, with half and half, no sugar.
Patricia, have you always been a coffee drinker?
No. Actually, I think I started drinking coffee when I was about 27.
Oh.
Yeah. I never even drank coffee up until then.
Well, did you have a role that you were getting up really early or...
No, I was a single mom and doing film, so yeah, I guess that was...
Those are enough of...
Enough.
...roles to require, sure.
And do you make coffee a particular way?
No, not really. I mean, honestly, during the week, mostly my husband makes it because he gets up a little bit before I do, and he knows how to make it good and strong for me. And then on the weekends, sometimes I'm up before him, so I make it, but no, I'm not.
Yeah.
I'm not a snob that way. I'm just a snob that I love the smell and that first sip in the morning.
Is yeah, it's got to happen, isn't it?
Yeah.
The day doesn't go very well.
No.
Excellent. Well, as I say, Patricia, it's been a pleasure listening to all of your stories. And I'm sure, as you said a moment ago, we could be on for another hour or two talking about all different things. But unfortunately, we've came to the end of our hour. And
well, it's been an absolute pleasure.
And... as I say, it's been a pleasure having you.
Thank you so much, Patricia.
Thank you.
Yes, take care.
Hi, I'm Patricia Charbonneau, and you've been listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations on WGXC 90.7 FM. Special thanks to George, Gordon, and Billy from the band White for the theme music, and to everyone at WGXC. Thank you.